This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hackback Bar and Grill.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at SeattleSports.com.
Yes, it is time for the Hot Stove once again. Welcome back. Gary Hill, Shannon Dreher here. Shannon, it is great to see you as always.
Good to see you too. We're still here. We're in Seattle, but we are getting so close.
I just yesterday, I took out the big bag and brought it upstairs. The big bag that goes with me everywhere during the course of the baseball season. And for the winter, it gets put away under the basement stairs. I don't see it all winter. And I brought it out because my spring training packing is really just walking around the house and living my daily life and remember, like, oh yeah, I'm going to need that. And then I throw it in the bag. So for like a 3 week stretch, the bag just sits in my office and I throw stuff in it.
So you show up in Arizona with nothing but fleeces and
beanie caps
and everything
random else,
and then you have to go shopping.
Yeah, usually, yes. That's usually the case. It might be a little chilly when we get there. It's a long spring because of the WBC.
I've been thinking about that. Yeah, I think I'm down there a week earlier than I normally am. Yeah. So we will have to adjust, and we might need to bring boots.
We're still calling you the voice of spring, right?
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes, absolutely. I am the official voice of spring.
Yes.
It's going to usher in what is going to be a tremendous baseball season, and the voice of summer can take it once we get on the plane.
Yes. I love the sound of that. I am really looking forward to this show. We are going to have Scott Servais on, Mariners manager. Mm-hmm. That's going to come up at the beginning of the show in just a few minutes. We're going to have Cooper Hummel on, get to know him a little bit.
It's about time.
Yeah, it is about time.
He was signed when?
Yeah, it was a while.
Or trade.
Trade, yeah.
Yes.
It was early in the offseason.
Yes.
Yeah, very early.
So, yes, it's time we learn about this Cooper Hummel.
Portland, Oregon. Grew up a Mariners fan. I think you're really going to enjoy the conversation. Yeah. And speaking of growing up Mariners fan, we're going to talk to Dave Cameron. And I know a lot of Mariner fans, they hear the name Dave Cameron, it's like, yes.
I have been waiting for this for so long, and I've been suggesting it at the radio station as well. He's hard to get. This is a big get. I don't know if you understand. This is a big get.
He's busy.
He is busy and so important to the Mariners. But so fascinating along so many different lines. You can't just have one segment with Dave Cameron. You've got to have two.
Yes, we're going to have two segments. It is a great story. Grew up a Mariners fan, USS Mariner, if you don't know. They went to Fangraphs for a decade and started working for the Padres after that. The Padres hired him in their front office, and now he's a full-time member of the Seattle Mariners front office. The Mariners fan who was writing about the Mariners that got all this started is now helping make decisions and helping shape the Mariners roster. I think the whole thing is incredible. I love it.
It happens, and it just speaks to the diversity of baseball right now and just so many different angles that you attack this sport. It's no longer just eyes. There are different, so many, and it's not just a scouting eye. There are so many different ways to look at this game, and everybody's looking for that little bit of extra. So you never know. And Dave is far from the only who has gone from the website to a front office.
Yes, that has definitely been a trend. He's one of the first, though, one of the groundbreakers. Jeff Sullivan, too, was also writing with him. Was in
opposing
Tampa Bay.
Teams. They were opposing blogs, best of friends, but right. Opposing blogs and then opposing teams, which is just awesome.
It's so great.
And both quite good.
Very good, yes. That conversation is going to be fun. We'll talk to Steve Sparks, one of our favorites. The Astros, I find so fascinating, just everything kind of going on surrounding them. Of course, they won the World Series. They're going to be really good again this year, but especially the front office situation. There's a lot of things going on that I'm interested in.
Yeah, they've kind of been the blueprint, and there's still things that you can look to them for that, especially, I mean, you look at the Mariners, and some of the progression is very similar. So if you want to kind of wonder what next, that sometimes is a good place to look. But all of a sudden, this offseason, kind of a wrench thrown in that, and a big one. Absolutely big one with what has happened with the front office.
Yeah, and Steve Sparks always gives us great insight and everything going on there. And he's as dialed in as anybody with every team in baseball. He knows as much about the Mariners as anyone else. It's pretty amazing.
Absolutely. And a great guy to boot.
Yes, absolutely. Is a great guy, no doubt.
He would say the same of us.
Yeah.
I think so.
He's a good guy.
So.
He would. The NFL playoffs in full swing. The Halfback Bar and Grill is the perfect place to catch all the action. Come out this Sunday for the NFC and AFC Championship. Enjoy the great game day vibes. Visit halfback.com to make a reservation today. We have the Mariners manager, Scott Servais, coming up right after this. Hot Stove continues.
The Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Halfback Bar and Grill.
Welcome back to the Hot Stove. Gary Hill, Shannon Dreher with you, brought to you by Steelheads Alley, as we have Scott Servais, Mariners manager, with us. Scott, great to chat with you. How's your offseason going?
It's going great, guys. It gets really short. There's no doubt about that. And we're coming up on spring training here really shortly, and I'm excited. I'm excited to get back. Obviously, we had a really tremendous season last year, and with a couple of additions we have to our ball club, everybody's anxious to get back together and see what 2023 can bring us. So I'm looking forward to it.
Scott, let's take it back a little bit. How do you unpack everything that, not just the entire season, but that last week? How long did it take to kind of just get into your off season?
It took a while. I gotta be honest, Shannon. With the way our season ended, with we're in such a high, and the big game, certainly the series with Houston didn't go our way, but getting a chance to reflect and look back, I'm really proud of our team. I thought we played extremely well, very competitive. Obviously, just a swing of the bat here or there, a pitch here or there, it certainly could have gone a different direction for us. But what a year! I mean, we take so much from it. Certainly getting in the playoffs the first time in a long time will help a relatively, we're a very young team still. I know it's going to help us going forward.
What did you learn about yourself as a manager guiding your team through that season and all the big games and playoff games along the way?
I think I've learned a lot through the years. Last year was my seventh year on the job. I think the biggest thing is just the value of really listening to players and the people around me. And, I have so much trust and confidence in our coaching staff and, what they bring to the mix and kind of the group of our staff put together. We really, we bring different levels of experience, different levels of what we do and being at the top of our game and what we do. So learning how to lean on the people around me, I think I've gotten much better with that through the years. But ultimately, it's about the players. I've said that since day one. And what we have going right now in our clubhouse and on our rosters is a really good thing. We've got guys that certainly understand our standards and how we go about our work and kind of the environment around our team. And then we've got guys that are holding each other accountable. And that's what it takes, to take the next step to get to the next level. And players believe in what we're doing. We've got good players. We've got good young players. And we have a hungry fan base. So, what else do you need? And it's been great, looking at our team and watching this thing come together and, seeing some of the young players come up, the trades we've made, the free agent signings, the whole thing coming together has been a lot of fun.
Scott, a few weeks ago, I was kind of going through some of the things that we did, listening to some interviews, reading some posts and whatnot that were written, and something that jumped out at me, and I'm glad I did this because it wasn't something that was top of mind, but a real interesting development last season was there was a point in time where you look at whatever the expectations were on this team, but I think everybody wanted them to get to the postseason, and a lot of people thought, well, it'd be great if they got into a wild card game and played a wild card round. At some point, and I don't know where it was driven, but I know you were there, and then I was hearing it from player after player after player. There was a true belief, and I'm not, I'm talking true belief, that you were more than a wild card team. Your goals were bigger than that. Then, to a man, I think it was in guys' heads that, you know what, we can take this the distance. How did that evolve? Where did that come from?
Confidence certainly grew, you know, with our team. We had the great stretch there through July, the 14-game winning streak. We were winning big series against the best teams in the league, and not just the playoffs. And we're a team that can go deep in the playoffs and get to the World Series. And certainly the acquisition of Luis Castillo added a lot to that. When you go out, of course, it's a good group to be around. Like I said, as the confidence grew, I start talking about it. We're better than just a wild card team, and we're not finished, and we're just getting started. And all those type of comments that I and my coaching staff made, and the players start talking about it. And that's really when you got to go on. So we learned a lot about ourselves last year, but we're really fired up about moving this ball down the field and looking ahead.
Yeah, looking ahead to next year. How do you approach and talk about the expectations when you start meeting with your group in a few weeks?
Well, I think it's not something you have to have a team meeting and say, okay, guys, here's the expectations this year. We're not really wired that way. I think everybody understands, what we've accomplished last year. But it's last year, and I made a comment oftentimes, that each team, each season has its own personality. It really does. Mm. And we look back to 2021, and we finished the season so strong there, you just thought we were going to continue to roll, and then wasn't going so easy for us in April and May, and we kind of had to come up with a different identity. And each team takes on its own identity. So as far as the expectations and whatnot, obviously the expectation, the goal is to win the division. And it ain't going to be easy. Certainly the Astros won it all last year, and then they've got a really good club again. But that's the goal, win the division, get in the playoffs, and see where it goes from there.
Who have you been keeping in touch with this offseason? Have you checked in on players, or are there guys that you've kind of kept a closer watch of others, or it's a short one and they've got this is their time right now?
Well, we try to give players space. I think that's really important at this time. We spent so much time together once we get together in Arizona here, spring training. You're just with these guys every day. So you get players space, but you check just 4 or 5 guys that are trying to maybe make some major changes or overhaul. And the off season is really the time to make a major change. It's so hard to make physical adjustments throughout the course of the season as you're trying to go out there and compete at such a high level. So, if you want a guy he's going to change something in his stance or his approach or his swing path, that's constantly going on, our hitting coaches. And I'm getting updates there, and I'll check in with some guys. Other guys, we adjust maybe some of the off-season workload as they come into spring training, with the load that George Kirby put on last year, Logan Gilbert. We want to be – I don't want those guys coming out firing 98 miles an hour on day one of spring training. It does us no good. We have to kind of be careful in how we ramp up. And like I mentioned earlier, our pitching coaches, our hitting coaches, our staff is really on it and talk with the guys. And it's family. You want to give the guys a little space, but they also want to stay a little bit close enough. So you do have an idea where they're at health-wise and making sure they're ready to go.
Tell us your thoughts on the addition of Teoscar Hernandez.
He can hit homers. I know that. We saw it firsthand. He's a very accomplished hitter. He's been one of the more consistent guys. I say that, and if you look back at his season last year, he got off to just a really rough start. I think we saw him early in the year when we were in Toronto, and quite frankly, we handled him pretty easily. You could just tell his timing was off and whatnot, but he quickly got it right. And that's a guy that's going to do damage, against righties, against lefties, it really doesn't matter. Getting a chance to talk to him, he's excited. I think it's going to be a great game for us.
Who are you most interested to get your eyes on this spring?
There's a couple of guys. I know that J.P. Crawford has done a lot of work this offseason in the weight room and his strength and conditioning training and what he's doing there. So, anxious to see how that looks as we get going with spring training. I think, you're always looking forward to seeing some of the younger players. I don't think anybody's worked as hard as Jared Kelnick and Taylor Trammell have this offseason, trying to make some adjustments in their swing to allow them to be more consistent. So, definitely anxious to see those guys, see how Tom Murphy's progressing. Murph was out almost the whole year last year with a left shoulder injury. He's back. He's ready to go. He's really anxious. Those are the guys on our roster. I think, the Harry Fords, the Bryce Miller, some of the younger players that will be in camp. I'm always anxious to see you hear so much about them, and I know our player development staff, our scouting staff, you know, so high on these players. So getting to be around them on an everyday basis through spring training is always.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting this year with so many different rule changes. I'm interested in your thoughts on the shift restriction, and how much do you think it will impact the game this year?
I think it's going to impact the game quite a bit in a positive way. We need more action in our game. You know, you see just pitching just dominating the game here the last few years, and how hard it is to get hits and base runners and getting action going on the bases. So eliminating the shift will certainly help that. I think we've got some guys that will take advantage of that. You know, Cal Raleigh and Jared Kalnick are in their left-handed hitters are the ones that are hurt by it the most. So I think it's going to be a big change in the game. And also a little change how you look at defensive players. You know, a big part of what we do is run prevention, driven by our pitching and our defense. You know, Colton Wong is a great, you know, reputation and being an outstanding defender. So a guy that's good, we're going to have to do a good job trying to get him in the right spots on the dirt, on the infield. But it'll be a little bit different look. I think fans will like it.
And on the pitching side, Diego Castillo. Has there been any pre-work on speeding things up with him with a pitch clock yet?
It's odd that you'd bring that up, Shannon. you know, the pitch clock is going to be a little bit of an adjustment. And, you know, the amount of time, you know, you've got 15 seconds by the time the ball gets in your hand when you're on the dirt to deliver a pitch. It's also going to speed up the hitters. I don't think people realize that. So some hitters like to really slow it down. They like to digest the pitch they just saw and making sure they're clear in their mind what they're looking for as they step in for the next pitch. But the hitter's got to be in box ready to go with 8 seconds. It'll affect some guys more than others. Certainly Diego, it's going to be a big thing in spring training games. People will be staring at the clock a lot early on until it just becomes, you know, part of what we do. So the one thing I know about baseball players is they can adjust. Diego's one at the top of my list as well, Shannon. We're going to have to talk in a little bit about that.
Hey, do you anticipate with some of the changes that we'll see more out of the running game baseball-wide?
I do, Gary. I think that's going to be the biggest change, along with batting average going up and some more action there. You're going to have more guys on base. And, you know, everybody said, well, it's a big deal. The, you know, bases are going to be a little bit bigger. It doesn't sound like a big deal, but it actually is. And probably one of the bigger things is, you know, the pitchers will be limited to the number of pickoff throws to first base. You know, once you pick over twice, if you pick over the third time within the course of one at-bat against the same runner over there and he's safe, it's an automatic balk and he moves up a base.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it. We'll see you here coming up in a few weeks.
I look forward to it, guys. Thanks for having me on. And like I said, just a couple of weeks away from spring training and can't wait to get down there and get going with our new club.
There it is, Mariners manager Scott Servais. You can get all the Mariners action this season with a Flex membership. Choose the games and seats you want all season long. Plus, save at least 10% on tickets that get priority presale access to the 2023 All-Star Week. Come on board, Mariners.com/Flex. We have a very fun conversation coming up next. We're going to check in with Dave Cameron, now part of the Mariners front office. We'll talk about his journey, what he does now for the Mariners. All that coming up next as the Hot Stove continues right after this.
The Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
Welcome back to the Hot Stove. Great to have you with us tonight. Gary Hill, Shannon Dreher with you as we get a chance to visit with Dave Cameron, who has just a great job title, Senior Director of Player Procurement for the Seattle Mariners. Dave, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
No, I'm happy to be here. I'm excited that someone else likes my title. I always have to explain what it is, and so I'm glad you guys are excited about it.
Oh, we're going to ask that question, that's for sure. But first, I want to talk about your background a little bit. I know a lot of Mariner fans are very aware of who you are and your background, but I know there's a lot of Mariner fans who aren't. So for me, I'm excited because when I was reading about the Mariners, you were the first that I remember. USS Mariner, Dave Cameron, the first, you know, outside of like the newspaper story, the first time I remember reading someone writing about the Mariners. And for me, it was eye-opening. It was this whole new world opened up for me.
Yeah.
If I were to have told USS Mariner Dave Cameron that X number of years later, Dave Cameron would be helping shape the Mariners roster and acquiring players, what would you have said?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I even go back to, like, you know, growing up in SeaTac, listening to games on the radio. You know, like, we didn't have a TV when I was a kid. So, like, I fell in love with baseball through Dave Niehaus, like, talking to me about, you know, Harold Reynolds and Dave Malley and Scott Bankhead and Dave Fleming and all these guys. Like, you know, obviously the good teams later, but I grew up with the bad teams, right? And, like, in the late 80s, early 90s was, like, kind of my cutting my teeth on baseball and just really, like, that kid getting to, like, have an impact and work for the Seattle Mariners. Just, like, I'm doing, you know, the inner kid inside me is doing backflips. The USS Mariner guy who was, like, asking Bill Bavasi to, like, not do all the things that he just kept doing over and over, like, you know, asking the organization to, like, look at players differently. For me to get to sit in the chair and get to talk to Jerry and Justin and these guys and get to weigh in and be part of a team, building, a roster that made the playoffs for the first time in 20 years. And it's just really cool. I mean, this is, like, I'm a writer at heart. And, like, this is an awesome story. I hope that someone someday writes down, like, the ridiculousness of my career path, because I could not have possibly imagined that this would come to pass.
Yeah, it seems like you opened doors, though. I mean, to me, it seemed like you were the first really to go from the blog to the front office, which was huge. And I mean, Gary and I are geeking out a little bit. We were both huge fans. I actually commented on USS Mariner every now and then a long, long time ago. I think under an alias. I'm not sure if I remember. Long time ago. But just, you know, how does it, when you look back at that, was there any shot in your mind that this could turn into that? It was a different kind of access and different eyes. And baseball has, you know, now values that.
Yeah, I think at that time, I really kind of saw myself as a writer and not, like, I didn't see myself as someone working to be in a front office. I think, like, the people that I saw that teams were hiring were significantly more technical, right? Like, they were the PhDs from MIT. They were the guys who could sit down at a computer and build a projection system. They were going after Nate Silver. Like, they were going after a different kind of analyst, right? They were going after the more technical kid right out of school who knew machine learning and, you know, robotics and physics. I didn't have any of that, right? Like, I was an econ major who was, like, I had an accounting background and was running a blog because I missed my team and I lived 3,000 miles away. And, like, I didn't see myself as kind of, like, the type of analyst that teams were interested in. I really saw myself as, like, someone who had always wanted to kind of, like, write about baseball or talk about baseball. Honestly, like, at some point in my career, I thought I was going to be, like, a talk radio host, right? And so this was, like, a kind of modern talk radio, but not live, right? It was, like, my platform was not into a microphone. It was with a keyboard. And so I really saw myself more in that vein. It was, like, a member of the media. Never really imagined that, like, this would lead to a career on the inside. I think when the Padres called in 2017 and had kind of broached the idea of, like, hey, do you want to work for us? I think at that point, even then, I was really skeptical that I would be a good fit for them. I was like, you know, I'm just a writer, right? Like, I'm not what you need. And then having to spend 4 years in San Diego and now kind of hang out with the Mariners last year and be full time this year, really kind of seeing what a modern front office looks like, and that you don't necessarily have to be just the MIT PhD guy who's, like, really good at robotics or physics or whatever. Like, there's spots in the organization for people with my skill set has, like, really been eye opening and something surprising. This is definitely not a plan. I didn't start USS Mariner or go to Fangraphs thinking this was going to lead to a career in the front office, but I'm excited that it has.
What shaped how you looked at baseball and wrote about baseball in those early days?
Man, that's a great question. So I grew up, like I said, in the South Sound, went to a really small school. I didn't have friends who were, like, diehard baseball fans. My parents were not sports fans. Like, it wasn't, like, a thing in my house, right? I was the baseball fan in our house. We got my parents and my brother into it. But I didn't have friends to, like, talk baseball with. So way back in the early 90s, there was a thing called Usenet, which is, like, basically, like, kind of Reddit. Kind of like similar to today, but, you know, not nearly as well functioned. So there was a Mariner news group called Alt Baseball Sea Mariners. And there were a bunch of guys on there who, you know, were 45 years old. I was like 12 or 13 or whatever, right? But they would talk about Bill James and Rob Nyer, and the guys who went on to found Baseball Prospectus would post on these things. And so I just found, like, these really smart, interesting baseball people who I could argue with. And I would tell them what I heard on TV and that they didn't know what they were talking about. And they would tell me that I was just a kid and I should go do my homework. But I mainly just found a bunch of, like, older, really intense baseball fans to, like, kind of just have baseball conversations because I didn't have other 12 or 13 year olds who wanted to talk baseball with. And like I mentioned, like Rob Nyer at that point, at like I think it was called ESPN Net Sport Zone or something, was writing his columns and was like kind of my Bill James. And so Rob was kind of like one of the ones who showed me that you could write about kind of nerdier baseball things in less nerdy ways, right? Rob was probably a more approachable writer. And I think Rob was probably the biggest influence on my career early on.
Just to be clear, I mean, you were not just a baseball fan, you were a Mariners fan.
Yeah, I was a massive Mariner fan growing up in the South Sound. Dave Niehaus was my idol. I wanted to be Dave Niehaus until I realized that my voice was not conducive to a long-term career in broadcasting. But yeah, I was a huge Mariner fan. Like I mentioned, we didn't have a TV until I was 10. So I grew up on the radio, listening to games, and then eventually making my parents get me a bus pass so I could take the bus from South Center to downtown and go watch games. And I was a huge Mariner fan. Really, like, I went to Dave Valley's baseball camp when I was 10 years old, and actually, like, I met Randy Johnson after he got traded, and like he was the guy at the table that no one wanted his autograph because he wasn't famous at the time. Julio Cruz was like two tables over and everyone was standing in line for Julio Cruz. And I just went and hung out with like this 6'10 gangly Randy Johnson guy who no one had ever heard of. So I was a huge Mariner fan early in my life and you know, obviously remain a big Mariner fan today.
I have to ask, it was one of my favorite scenes on clinch night when we got let into the clubhouse. There you were. And it just all seemed to come full circle. What was that like for you?
It was amazing. I mean, you know, realistically for Jerry and Justin to make room for me to be in that space, to get to watch these guys celebrate 20 years of frustration kind of coming to an end. And like just how much it meant for the city to be able to be in the clubhouse watching these guys dump champagne on each other. Really just a surreal moment. Like one of those things that I will remember for the rest of my life for sure.
Well, given Dave Niehaus was your idol, this spring, we've got to have you call a couple of batters. We've got to be in the booth. We got to hear some Dave Cameron play-by-play of a couple of batters. We have to.
I will do my best. I will not have any good catchphrases. I don't have any rye breads. I don't have the my oh my, but I'll do my best to not embarrass myself.
Well, I think about what you were writing about at the time, and it was so different than everything else. And now, you know, it's more mainstream to watch the progression. What do you think about the progression when you see where everything has gone?
I mean, it's fascinating, right? I think like, you know, Jeff Sullivan, who wrote a Look at Landing, another Mariner blog, you know, he works at Tampa Bay Rays now. Him and I are still good friends. We talk about this all the time. I actually think one of the interesting things, if you look at these pockets of like where baseball writers come from, like Bill James and Rob Nyer and Randy Gisarelli and Jeff Passan are all from Kansas City, right? And like Jeff and I, and there's others who have come in here out of Seattle. I actually think like writing about a losing team and following a losing team that is like just really behind, and the Mariners were like just really behind in how they viewed player analysis for a long time. It actually is, it does like spark some kind of like ability for outside thinkers to just have a voice, right? It's like if you're writing about the Rays, like you know, I'm sure there are really good Rays bloggers out there, but it's probably really hard to just be like, they did the smart thing again. You know, like it's like a really difficult column to write. It's like, yep, they made another good trade and we're gonna have a small payroll and somehow win anyway, right? Like this is probably just like a difficult column to write every single time they make a transaction. But I think the Mariners, or for the Royals and the Bill James, Rob Nyer days, have just created a lot of fodder for like interesting conversation. Like, what else could they have done? Literally anything. They could have done anything else. They didn't have to acquire Carl Everett and hit him fourth, right? Like, there were a bunch of different decisions they could have made along the way. And so I think like just the fact that the team was really bad from 2003 to 2019 or whatever, created a bit of a fertile ground for people like me to just have a voice, to have conversations about how the organization could pivot, how they can do things differently, how they can look at players differently. I think if I had grown up in, you know, the Bronx or something and just wrote about the Yankees instead, I probably wouldn't have had a baseball career, because like, it's just a lot harder to write about teams that just win 100 games every year.
Yeah. We're visiting with Dave Cameron, Senior Director of Player Procurement. And yes, we are going to ask the question what that is. When we come back, it's the hot stove. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
Welcome back to the Hot Stove. Great to have you with us. Gary Hill, Shannon Dreher, Dave Cameron. Senior Director of Player Procurement. Now, you've said you described what this means. So tell everyone, what exactly does this mean?
Yeah, so I think when Jerry was trying to come up with a title for what I was going to do here, you know, the Mariners already have a lot of people who kind of live in the spaces that I, you know, what I did in San Diego. I kind of like oversaw the research and development team, the analytics team with the Padres. Obviously managed Fangraphs for a long time, overseeing a bunch of analysts. And the Mariners already have that, right? Like, they have a really well built out Jesse Smith, Joel Fuhrman, a bunch of these guys who've been here for a long time already running the analytics departments. They didn't need that. And so, like, trying to figure out where I would fit, it was much more of like a, let's come up with an idea that like complements what already exists. I'm not here to like build something new. The Mariners are no longer behind. Like, they've got really smart people doing really smart things. And it's one of the reasons why the team is good now. And so I think what we've just talked through is like, one of the things that I like doing is player evaluation, right? And so like, there are aspects of kind of building models and doing the technical work that I can, you know, sit in and be part of a meeting on, but I don't need to oversee that stuff. There are people way smarter than me doing that now. And so I can just be on the side of the room and not really have like a, you know, a real strong hand in what's being done there. But I, when it comes to like, hey, which player should we acquire? Do we want to play right field? You know, what player in the draft do we want to talk about? Are there interesting international players coming over from Japan or Korea? Or, you know, are there interesting markets emerging where you could go get new talent, and should we go scout those areas? This is just an area that is always, you know, been of interest to me. It's something I wrote about a ton at USS Mariner and Fangraphs over the years. And so we just kind of like carved out a player evaluation space where I can be part of the team that talks about players. And when it comes to, you know, kind of any acquisition of a player coming to the organization, I can just be part of the conversation, right? And so I don't have to necessarily run the research and development departments like I did in San Diego. Here I can just, you know, sit around with 6, 7, 8, 9 other people who have expertise in their area and just spitball ideas. And it's a really unique job.
So I know you're just getting into this, but what do you envision a normal day looking like for you?
Yeah, man, it's fascinating. I realize that there is no such thing as a normal day, right? Every day is pretty different. I do think like one of the things that I'm learning on the inside rather than being on the outside is how many people there are who have like really interesting ideas, really interesting concepts. And right, there's only so many conversations that Jerry and Justin can have throughout the organization. There just isn't time for them to sit down and talk with, you know, 150 people and hear all of their ideas. So I think one of the things that I've take it upon myself is like, let me go find some of these people who work in the organization who have really interesting concepts, who, if they had an hour with Jerry or Justin, they would float out something that we should definitely go do, right? And so I'm trying to put myself in situations where I can find these people who have fascinating concepts, have ideas that can help make the Mariners win the division or make the playoffs for the, you know, the next 5, 10 years. Put myself in situations where I can have conversations with them and then try to figure out how I can surface their ideas or like help be a springboard for their concept to get in like a larger play in the organization. So I think one of the things I'm realizing coming in, you know, over the last 4 or 5 months is the Mariners have like a ton of really valuable, just high level thinkers in place and people who have like, chances to really impact this organization. And so a lot of what I'm doing every day is just trying to develop those relationships and develop, abilities for, you know, me to be able to take their ideas or take them into Jerry and Justin's office and be like, hey, you should talk to this person. Let's go spend an hour with them, hear what they have to do. So, player procurement is definitely like, can be a lonely occupation, just like flipping through leaderboards and flipping through stat pages and being like, I want this guy. But I do think that the Mariners are in a really good position to have a lot of people who are looking at players across the board, and whatever I can do to kind of surface their ideas and kind of build collaboration. That's something that I've, you know, early on in my Mariner career here has been pretty important to me.
Earlier, you alluded to Tampa Bay. Now, you talked about Jesse Smith and Joel Fuhrman and all the smart people in the org. How competitive is it in Major League Baseball finding the next thing or finding that advantage that you're looking for?
It's wild. I mean, like, you know, I think when I was writing at USS Mariner, there were like 5 or 10 teams who had an analyst. And if you had an analyst, you were ahead of the curve, right? And now every single team in baseball has a very large research and development department. I went through and actually did a survey last year looking at like the average size. The average team now has an R&D department, people who like essentially write code, somewhere between like 14 and 16 people. That's the average now, right? It was like 8, like 3 years ago. It is like growing dramatically. There's a ton of, I would say, emphasis on like the player movement space. So like one of the things I think we've seen is like, you know, we used to have box score data, right? Like this guy went 2 for 4 with a home run and 3 RBIs. And then it got into like ball tracking, right? Where you had like the track mandate of the ball was hit 112 miles an hour at this angle, or the pitch was thrown with like this amount of break. And so you had ball tracking. Now we're kind of in like the player tracking data where we can really kind of like look at how a player's mechanics move, and like there's like skeletal breakdowns with, you know, really cool high speed cameras, and teams are going very fast in this like player movement direction, where instead of saying like, okay, he hit a home run, it's because he hit the ball hard. It's like, how did he hit the ball hard? Right. We're going even another level down now. And so these are like real scientists kind of would go work at, you know, Carnegie Mellon or something, or the University of Washington, who would otherwise be trying to solve cancer. We're now pulling them into baseball and being like, hey, can you help this guy hit the ball a little harder, or put a little more spin on his curveball? I think the level of expertise has just changed dramatically. And there's some just, you know, every day I'm just confronted with like some of the smartest people I've ever worked with. And, you know, there's 50 of them, you know, like in every organization, there's just like unbelievably smart people all trying to solve these really interesting problems.
You're talking exactly about something that has fascinated me with the changes that we have seen with the technology, with what we know about human beings and physiology and biomechanics and everything else. How do you even evaluate a player anymore? It used to be, well, 3 years, they are what they are. But I don't think that is necessarily the case anymore, when they can go to a drive line, when they can get an evaluation, when they can go to work. How does that impact what you do and how you look at players today and what they are?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I realized about myself is like when I was at Fangraphs, a huge part of what we did was just like tell people to trust the projections. Like there's public projection systems like Zips or Steamer or Pacoda Baseball Prospectus that have been out there for years, just like taking an average of the last player's, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, time weighting it, doing some park adjustments, and basically saying like, hey, this guy has hit, you know, on average, he's hit 287, he's this old, it's been in this park. This is basically what you can expect. My general feeling now is like, you know, there's still value in that, in those kinds of systems. They still do a pretty good job of giving you a baseline. But if you don't know that this player just went and added, you know, 3 new pitches this offseason, or just came up and spent like 3 months at driveline coming up with a pitch design, and his slider is going to be an entirely different pitch this year, it's 9 miles an hour harder, it has a totally different break profile, he's going to throw it different, like he's not the same pitcher, he just has a different arsenal than he did a year ago, how you're going to run a past historical projection on someone who just changed all of their pitches over the offseason? You can't do it, right? And so I think one of the things we've seen, like there's been a huge development on player development, you know, in baseball over the last, say, 5 years, right, where players are just becoming, they're just having access to tools that they haven't had access to previously, information they haven't had previously. And I just don't, I think the idea of like a ceiling has just gone away, right? Like there, you know, we talk about in the draft, like this guy has a high ceiling, this guy is like probably more of like a, you know, bench utility player. Like a lot of these, like Mookie Betts was a bench utility player until he turned into the second best player in baseball, right? And like this idea that a player is just kind of limited by what he is and what he's done is just not really true. We've seen tons of guys who just overhaul their repertoires, overhaul their strength training, add 20 pounds, get 5 miles of extra bat speed, whatever it is, they just become physically different players. And I think what we've had to do is really adapt and say, like, we're not going to so much look at historical performance to project players going forward. We're looking at their physical skills, and we're trying to evaluate, like, if you can swing a bat this fast, and if you can, you know, make contact on a swing that has like this kind of swing plane, and if you can hit these kinds of pitches in this part of the zone, then you can be a good player. And now we're trying to identify those skills that drive a good player, rather than just being like, you've had a good performance for the last 3 years and you're 28 years old, you're probably going to age pretty well. That just doesn't really work in baseball that well anymore.
You know, along those lines, we talked to Paul Sewald last week, who has changed himself as a pitcher. And obviously, Mariners have seen that the last couple of years. It was interesting in the conversation to think about the organization, the analysts where you're at, the coaching staff, and the player, and how the synergy all works to benefit the player. How do you think about that? How important is that? That everyone's on the same page.
It is the most important thing. So I think, like, you know, I mentioned that, like, every team has a bunch of analysts and a bunch of really smart people trying to solve these problems. What every team does not have, that I do think Mariners have established really well, is that communication link down to the coaches, down to the player. And it's like that synergy where, like, it's not the analysts lecturing the coach on here's what you need to do. It is two people who believe fundamentally the same thing, that they're trying to solve a problem. They're going to work together. They have complementary skills. The coaches are bought in. The players are bought in. The front office is bought in. what I've seen in my time in Seattle is a real buy-in from the coaching staff and the players and, you know, on the major league side, the minor league side, all throughout the organization to work with the front office where it is hand in hand. We're going to tackle this problem together. I think the idea of, like, you know, the old stats versus scouts or the front office versus the coaches, like, that's not a thing in Seattle anymore. And I think it's one of the reasons why the Mariners are so successful is, like, they're able to bring people like Paul Sewald into the organization and, like, the coaching staff and the analysts and all the people throughout the entire organization, the biomechanists, everyone can sit down and say, like, how can we help Paul Sewald be the best version of himself, right? And there's a plan put in place. The player can buy in, the coaches can buy in, and everyone's preaching the same thing and helping Paul Sewald become one of the best relievers in baseball.
It's been fascinating to watch that buy-in. And I think there's some skepticism that you would ever see that at the big league level, but that's baseball now, isn't it?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, like, you know, the average age of these coaches is like 32 years old or something, right? Like the idea of this like long-term gray beard guy who played in the 70s and like is now your manager. Like there are definitely people like that still around and like super valuable experience to have the history of baseball. But I think the ones who are still working in dugouts and are still working with players are ones who have adapted to kind of the modern language of baseball and have learned how to connect to the modern player, right? Like players come up now with access to this information. They want it. They're craving it. They want their organization to provide them this level of information. And so, it's watching the Gabe Kapler have 17 coaches or whatever, like all of these things have changed in baseball. It's just really fascinating to see how fast it all happened. Because I think like, you know, during my early kind of baseball writing career, like the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, things didn't change that fast, right? We would rant about, hey, maybe we shouldn't bunt with our best hitter all the time for 20 years, right? And teams just kept bunting with their best hitter for, you know, a very long time. And, you know, it took like, you know, generation essentially to see the adoption of some of these more, you know, sabermetric ideas into baseball. And then watching like the on-field staff and development and the ability to drive information to players change in like 5 or 6 years has just been fascinating to see how quickly that happened.
You're right. Things have evolved so quickly. Is there always going to be a next? Is there always going to be somewhere to go next?
I think so. I mean, like the player movement space is like, we're scratching the surface of that. This is not a solved problem. There's no organization out there that knows how to keep their pitchers 100% healthy or how to give everyone an extra 10 miles an hour of velocity or to give every pitcher 9 extra inches of sweep on their slider or whatever, right? Like everyone is trying to figure out these problems. We are very early on in the player movement analysis space. And then I think what we've seen is like, you know, Houston 10 years ago did a really good job with the ball tracking stuff. One of the reasons they've had success over the last decade is they were an early mover in that space. But now the rest of the league has caught up to them and now we're pivoting towards other things. Someone will come out of the player movement space as the leader in the space and understand kinetics and kinematics better than everyone else and get some huge advantages and probably see their players stay healthier. And then that people will hire their coaches and people will hire their guys and that will spread across the league. And then you'll need something else, right? So like the investment in this space will get you an advantage for 5 to 10 years, but there will always be something else, something that someone isn't working on. I don't think baseball is ever going to be a solved problem. You know, even like something like chess, right? It's been around for hundreds of thousands of years. There's still people working on new ideas of how to play chess, right? So I think there's always going to be a next thing. And I look forward to what the next few things are because they're always really fun when you see baseball make these huge kind of evolutions on itself.
I think we could ask what they are, but you won't tell us right now, right?
I think I can't tell you, and two, I'm not smart enough to know what they are. I'm just going to try and hire the smart people who find out those ideas, and then we'll try and keep them in Seattle as long as we can.
Well, I'll ask this. I mean, when we talked about the advances in technology and how that's helped players, I mean, that is seeming to really be skewing to the pitching right now. When does that come around? When do the hitters get some help?
I think the hitters are starting to catch up, right? Like there was definitely a run there for a little while where every pitcher was just coming out throwing 97. Now they throw 94 mile an hour sliders, which, you know, that wasn't a thing. I think hitters are now figuring out that like there are resources, there are ways for them to go train. Obviously Driveline in our backyard is probably the most famous, but there's, you know, all over the country, there's people working with hitting mechanics and hitting ideas, hitting philosophies. And I do think over the next couple of years, you know, we've even seen like, you know, I'll say like one of the most common kind of ways that teams adjusted over the last 5 years is to like throw more high fastballs, right? Like that was kind of the way baseball went. It was like throw the carry high fastball. It gets above the scoopy swing, the launch angle swing. You can miss the bat at the top of the zone. All these hitters now are training to hit the high fastball, right? And so like we've seen the high fastball does not play nearly as well as it did 3-4 years ago, right? Like last last year, the high fastball was a hittable pitch in Major League Baseball, when 5 years ago, this thing was just like, you know, if you threw a good carry fastball, you could get a 40% strikeout rate. I do think the hitters are catching up, right? And so, like, as now every pitcher is adding, you know, like these crazy 93 mile an hour sliders, they will train themselves how to hit hard breaking balls. So it's like a new pitch in baseball, right? Like the mid 90s breaking ball is not a thing that they historically had to learn how to hit. They will learn how to hit it and they will adjust. Hitters are smart and they're financially motivated to learn how to hit these pitches. I do think in the next year or two, we're going to see hitters catch up. And I think offense will come back in some ways, whether the rules changes allow like the shift, allow hitters to have some advantages, or just the monetary incentive for players to get better. Right. And I do think hitters will catch up in the next couple of years.
Dave, this has been so fun. We appreciate you giving us a lot of time tonight. We really appreciate it. Thanks so much for the visit. This was fun.
Get ready for those innings. Get ready to call those innings in spring training.
I'll do my best. I'll try and come up with something that will honor Dave and not be too embarrassing.
Yes, this is happening. This is happening. Right. Sure. There it is. Dave Cameron. We'll come back more Hot Stove right after this.
This is the Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Welcome back to the Hot Stove. Gary Hill, Shannon Dreher with you as we get a chance to visit with the pride of Portland. It's Cooper Hummel, the newest Mariner with us. Cooper, it's great to have you here. Thanks for the time. We really appreciate it.
Great to be here. Happy to be with Seattle.
So, how excited are you to be a Seattle Mariner?
It's a dream come true. I mean, I grew up with the Seattle Mariner logo painted on my bedroom wall, the teal baseboards, navy wall. I was a diehard fan growing up. I mean, so to put the colors on and put the uniform on is going to be really special for me. I'm very excited.
So to kind of complete the picture, you are an Oregon native that you grew up in Lake Oswego, it sounds like. And how did the Mariners come across your radar? What's your first memory of them?
Oh, man. So I was born in Portland. We actually moved up to Seattle for a year. I actually remember going to the Kingdom. I have this vivid memory of being in the Kingdom with a white Alex Rodriguez player T-shirt. And I wore that thing until it had holes in it. I mean, I'm telling you, like, it was like three sizes too big. I was like two or three. And then wore it until it was ratty and just my mom just threw it out because it was so old. But yeah, that was like my first vivid memory. But yeah, going to games growing up, I mean, it just T-Mobile, Safeco Field is what I know it as, but I can't say that anymore. So T-Mobile is like one of my favorite ballparks, just like total fan experience. And, you know, just being there is just special. I don't know how to describe it.
Who were your favorite guys growing up?
Ichiro was my favorite player. I loved watching Griffey, but you know, he was gone by the time I like really was appreciating baseball. So those early 2000s players, the Mike Camerons, the Ichiros, the John Olerud, Jay Buhner, those were the guys that I followed. I'm telling you, like every player T-shirt. My mom and dad just moved recently, and they were pulling old boxes out. And I've got, you know, a Jamie Moyer T-shirt, an Ichiro T-shirt, Kenji Jojima. I had the whole lot. Freddie Garcia, yeah. But Ichiro was my guy. I loved watching him. Loved the way he played. great to watch him, and pretty cool that I'll get a chance to work with him this spring.
Who were you when you were a little kid in the backyard? Which player were you out there?
Oh, I was Ichiro. I would do his, the bat pointed at the pitcher straight up and knees close together. Oh yeah. I would try to mimic it as best as I could. There's no one quite like him. I attempted the Griffey, the waggle is in there, but it's not the same sweet swing.
Nice. Well, your story is pretty remarkable. You've got to tell us about when you were in high school. You don't have to name names, but your junior varsity coach, what the baseball coach said to you when you were in high school.
Basically, so freshman year, I was straight up told I'll never amount to anything in baseball. Literally to my face. And I was like, excuse me? You know, as a freshman in high school going into sophomore year, like that's something that you're like, you know, it kind of breaks you. But yeah, I was told, you know, you have to give up switch hitting. You're not big enough. You're just not going to do it. You're not going to make anything of it in baseball. And I left. I went to the rival high school the next year. Sophomore year was really good. That coach actually came up to me the next year and was like, okay, I've kind of made a mistake. Like, he ate his own words. Like, I'm good with him now. It was a very interesting situation. But yeah, I won't name names, but it was quite a situation when I was told I would never amount to anything in baseball. Those words have stuck with me every day.
And probably, you know, and what you have chosen to do as a profession, it's not the easiest thing. And you can be kind of dealt with that day in and day out. That is something that you have to face. Getting that lesson early on, how did that prepare you for the journey of becoming a big leaguer?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of started earlier than even high school. Like, I felt like it happened in Little League. I was the shortest kid on the team, had to fight my way. Like, I was talented and I tried, I was a hard worker. Even from when I was little, my dad always joked he fed the monster as much as he wanted to be fed, meaning he would go throw balls for an hour, 2 hours if I wanted to hit. I was the shortest one, so we were with the all-star team. I wasn't always the one playing all the time. So I had to find a way to get on the field more, in high school being told that. And then, even like later in high school, like when I'm raking my junior and senior year, I'm like a first team all state. I was player of the year for our league. And I had college coaches basically be like, you're not big enough to play college baseball, Division I baseball. You're not good enough. Like, Santa Clara's coach straight up told me, like, you don't do anything well. Like, you're not special. Like, you don't do anything above, what another guy does. You need to be 30 pounds heavier. And I'm like, I don't know if we just watched the same game, but like, I'm a junior senior in high school and I'm like hitting balls off the wall. Like it's nobody's business. Like, why don't you get me into a strength program in college? I don't know. Like, I always believed in myself, but it just took one guy to give me a chance. And even in college at UP, things happen. I was dealt a bad hand a little bit my freshman, sophomore year, had to fight for more playing time. And, even in the minors, like different things have happened. And I don't think anything for me has ever been handed to me. And I'm very blessed that it's been that way because it wouldn't make me the player I am if it wasn't because of that. I've had to fight for different things in pro ball. I was inactive for 40 games my first year in pro ball. I thought I was getting released and here I am.
How much do you appreciate where you are right now, given everything you've been through to get here?
Oh, I mean, I appreciate it. More than I can even express. Like, this is all I've wanted to do since I was, 3 years old. When you're in preschool and kindergarten and first grade and you do that, when I grow up, I want to be a 1, 2, and 3, whatever it is. Baseball player, major league baseball player was always on there. The other two would always change, but major league baseball player was always on there. And it's all I've wanted to do. And so, to be able to say that I've accomplished that is one thing, but to, continue to have it be my profession and make it, even bigger is like, that's the end goal. It's like, keep it going. There's a lot of appreciation, but I know that, job's not done yet. We got a lot of more story to write.
And that story is going to be written now in a Mariners uniform. I can't even imagine when you heard the news, the trade was to the Mariners, but what are some of the conversations you've had since?
Friends and family are beyond excited that I'll be up there. As far as like from a coaching perspective and stuff like that, it's just, really looking forward to getting on the field together and working together. And then, the end goal is a World Series. I mean, I think that's discussed amongst all players. It's discussed amongst coaches. The goal is to win. And so whatever each one of us can do, including myself, to help the team win, that's kind of all that matters.
You're really interesting when you look at everything you do defensively. There's not many guys that can do what you do. Outfielder, catcher, you've done a little bit of everything. What do you consider yourself?
I kind of say just catcher, outfielder. Yeah. If someone asks, sometimes I joke, oh, I'm a super utility guy. Like I do it all. You just give me a glove. I didn't do a lot of first and third base last year. I've done it in years past. It's definitely something that if my number's called and they say, hey, go to third, like I'll do it. I would like to take some ground balls beforehand and not just get thrown out there. But I've done it since I was little where I was just like, I don't care where I play. I just want to play, want to help the team win. I want to play. I hate losing. Something about it just drives me absolute freaking nuts. And if me playing a position is going to help us win, that's all I care about. And I love to hit. So if the more times I get to hit, and if that means I got to go play, you know, if I got a DH or play second or third or first or left or right catch, like, I'll do it. I don't know if you want me a short, but I'll do it.
Mariners have a super infield coach, but I don't think you're going. I don't think they'll go there.
No, I don't think so. I think JP's got that locked up.
Okay, so you moved all your stuff from the Diamondbacks facility over to the Mariners facility, and we are just itching to get down there. I mean, if we could get on a plane and be there tomorrow, we would. If we did, what would we see? What has the scene been at the facility since you've been there?
Until, you know, beginning of last week, it's been just me and Sam Haggerty. No one else has been here. And Haggerty and I have been working out, hitting, getting our lifting in. Yeah, other than that, it's been silent. Last week, Cal Raleigh showed up, Matt Brash, Trevor Gott's been here a little bit, a buddy of mine with Arizona, JB Bukoskis just showed up this week after he got picked up off waivers. So the clubhouse is filling up a little bit more. And but yeah, just a bunch of guys getting their work in and, you know, trying to get ready for season. Tomorrow, we got some bullpens going on. It's kind of cool. We got me, Cal, and Hags hitting right now together and just picking each other's brains, trying to, you know, three switch hitters trying to figure out each other's swings and what, you know, what one thing we can build off of it, you know.
You spent your first time in the big leagues last year. What did you learn about yourself during that stretch in the majors?
Well, I learned I need to, you know, take it easy sometimes. You know, I'm a very high energy guy, and I've known this about myself in the past, but like when I'm at my best, I'm calm, cool, collected, like not caring. I know that sounds really bad to say you don't care, but like you're doing your job and you're just, you know, out there having fun. You know, the times I kind of struggled or put the pressure on myself to succeed, it wasn't what we wanted to do, you know, kind of some rough games. And I can pick out a game up in Cincinnati, just not a good game for me. And I think I was just, you know, putting the pressure on myself to do some more than I needed to. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. And then yeah, just go out and be me.
Have the Mariners given you any insight on whether you'll lean towards catcher, lean towards outfielder, or are you just going in preparing for anything?
I'm prepared for anything. The inside is all, you know, play a little left, play a little right, catch a little bit, and DH a little bit. There was a brief mention of first base, but I think that was just kind of like, oh, you've done it before. Like, make sure you just have the glove. Granted, we also have Ty France and Evan White over there. And, you know, I bet you any other of the infielders can throw a glove on if we need them to. But and Cal, I'm sure, can do it. Yeah, it sounds to me like the bulk of the work and stuff that I'll be doing is behind the plate and in the outfield, and that, you know, DH.
Regardless, so it sounds like you're bringing all the gloves and all the mitts to every game just in case.
Oh, my bag is packed. Like, it's freaking Costco in that bag.
Cooper, this has been so fun to get to know you a little bit. Thanks a lot for the time. We really appreciate it. And we can't wait to see you in a few weeks.
Can't wait to see you then. We're really glad to be on.
There it is, newest Mariner Cooper Hummel. We'll come back with more Hot Stove coming up right after this.
Welcome back to the Hot Stove. Gary Hill, Shannon Dreher with you as we have a chance to catch up with one of the absolute best in the game from the Houston Astros radio team. It's Steve Sparks. Sparky, is great to chat again. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It's been kind of a short off season as well for you guys. But I can't wait. I mean, it's just around the corner now to get back to spring training and look forward to another season. And if you guys are like us, we feel the American League West is going to be a dogfight the whole way.
It's so funny. I was just thinking about the last time we saw you, of course, was that marathon game in Seattle. We were just talking to Paul Sewald. He said he felt like they were never going to win and never lose that game. It just kept going. Does part of you think you'd still be in Seattle with that game being played? It would just never end.
I thought we'd be there right now. Yeah, we didn't think it was ever going to end. I've never seen such a well-pitched baseball game, both sides. And to see Kirby step up as a rookie, I remember texting a couple of you guys even during the game just saying, man, how impressive is he in that type of atmosphere to go out there and pitch the way he did. There was a lot to be admired in that game from both sides. It really was. And, you know, it could have gone either way, that series. I mean, everybody's well aware that, you know, the Mariners could have swept the Astros just as easily.
This seems like a question I should be asking towards the end of this, but I'll go ahead and ask it. It's one that we get the most, and this will be from a different perspective. Have the Mariners closed the gap at all with the Astros, or how much do you think they have? What do you see?
I think so. You know, when you start to look at what's going on in the division, and you look, okay, has this team improved? Has this team improved? Obviously, the Rangers have improved. I think, obviously, the Mariners have improved in a couple of different ways, not only, you know, with the addition of Teoscar and Colton Wong, but also just with a little playoff experience and maturation with George Kirby and Logan Gilbert, a couple of guys I love, and get a full year of Luis Castillo. So definitely improved. So the Astros, when you look at it, I think offensively they improved just by the additions of Michael Brantley signing back and giving them a little bit more balance in their lineup. But Jose Abreu, I think, is a fantastic addition. So offensively, I think the Astros have improved. But you can't help but think that they've taken a step back when you lose a Cy Young Award winner with Verlander. So we'll see what, you know, what Hunter Brown has in store. You know, a lot of people feel like he can step in and do a great job in the rotation, but he's not Justin Verlander, you know, and whether or not he's ever Justin Verlander remains to be seen. Probably not. Who is? But I don't know. We'll see. You know, I think what it's going to determine more than anything, Shannon, is who stays the healthiest for the longest. And when you play deep into October, year after year after year, that's when you have to get really creative and very smart about resting your players during the course of the season. I remember in 2016, it was a year after the Astros made the playoffs for the first time. They got down in 2016, and they played catch-up the entire season, and they really wiped out their bullpen. And I'm kind of wondering in the back of my mind, did the Mariners have to push their relievers a little extra, you know, the last 2 months of the season to make that push to make sure they got into the playoffs? And will they see a little bit of residue from that? We'll see. I've got a lot of confidence that Scott Servais did his utmost best, and you guys would know more than me, but I remember the Astros went through that, and those guys' tongues were hanging out at the very end of that season, and they didn't make it.
It was a really interesting lead up to that, too, because the Mariners had that struggle in September, and they weren't actually able to get to their high leverage relievers for about a span of about 10 days. And I sometimes wonder if that had a little bit to do with what we saw, that they got a little bit out of routine at that point, and then it was turned up pretty quickly once the postseason began.
Yeah, that's possible. You know, and we were wondering, too, you know, were the Astros going to get rusty from having to sit out that first week, you know, right after the regular season? Because, you know, like you said, it's the routine that guys really rely on to feel good. But I don't think you really know. I think it's just a case by case, you know, and you try to figure out ways. And I think that's when you lean on your training staff and your strength trainers and all those guys to figure out ways to keep guys sharp. And, you know, and then you're going to lean a lot on your depth, too, you know. Is Bryce Miller or Emerson Hancock, those guys, are they going to be, you know, integral parts of the team this year and provide that depth that they might need, you know, at some point, or spell a guy or two to give them a blow when they most need it? But the Astros have gotten creative in that way from time to time. They've got everybody in their bullpen back. They feel good about that. And rotation-wise, I don't think anybody hardly needs it the first month of the season, but after the first month of the season, the Astros really flourished, I think, because they were able to utilize a six-man rotation and give Verlander a lot of rest and a lot of guys a chance to recover. And not only a chance to recover, but maybe to push them an extra inning or so every once in a while when it was their turn in the rotation to give the bullpen a blow.
You alluded to Verlander, which I think is so interesting, because most teams losing a reigning Cy Young Award winner, it would be a devastating blow. It doesn't seem to be, though, when you look at the Astros rotation on paper. When you look at Valdez and Javier and up and down the rotation, how much growth do you think is still in there for that young part of the rotation?
Yeah, well, we can I think Luis Garcia has a chance to take a couple of more steps forward. Certainly Javier. I mean, it's never really been pushed innings-wise yet, so I think they're going to count on him to get a little deeper in games. And as we see him mature, we see him start to throw less pitches to get out, which is helpful. But, yeah, you look at, you know, Framber Valdez and Jose Urquidy, now Hunter Brown and Lance McCullers. It rounds out to six guys that are good candidates to kind of mix and match a little bit and maybe skip a guy every once in a while or stick a guy on a phantom IL or whatever you need to do to keep guys going. But I like the six-man rotation. So here's one of the reasons why, Gary, is guys aren't pitching like Greg Maddux anymore. I mean, I can't think, you know, Marco Gonzalez is the closest guy I could think of in our division that really, you know, pitches with feel, you know, and changes speeds and moves the ball around. But everybody else, I think, is airing it out for the most part. So I think an extra day of recovery is helpful to get guys to the finish line. So I think a six-man rotation is something that we might start to see the way the guys just pitch now.
Yeah, especially with a team like Houston where the goal is and the expectation is the season doesn't end at the final day of the regular season. This is a team that wants to play another month after, right?
Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, they've done it. So it's been 8 years now, seven of the last 8 years that the Astros have played pretty deep. You know, and six LCSs in a row and four World Series. So, yeah, they do expect that. And how could you not? You know, and so these players go in there, and I don't know if it's cocky or confident or whatever, but they prepare and they hold guys back in spring training because they have one less month of recovery, number one. But number two is they plan on doing it again. So we'll see. You know, right now the window appears to still be open because of the influx of those young Latin American pitchers that you talked of in the rotation. And right now it looks like their offense might be a little bit better too. So, but you know, when it all comes to push and shove, the Astros were very healthy last year, and to count on that type of health year after year isn't very smart. You got to have some depth.
Okay, so you're giving us the blueprint for what to do after that first year of getting there and that extra time and the extra energy that is expended. That's all good for the players. What do we do as broadcasters?
As broadcasters, I think you show up as prepared as you can and hang on for dear life. You know, you never know what's going to happen on a daily basis. That's what we love about it, isn't it? So I think that's one of my favorite things about us. You know, and we've been doing this now for a little over a decade together, is being able to get a chance to, you know, hang out for 30 minutes before a game and talk about each other's teams and catch up on each other's lives and see what everybody's doing. But, you know, cultivating those relationships and getting some inside stories on the other teams too is exciting to me because it's interesting, you know, and it's, you know, it gets boring sometimes just talking about the same guys, your guys, all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's the most fun part about playing your divisional opponents. You know, we're playing each other less now, but, man, we know each other pretty well, don't we? I mean, I know I could rattle off 10 guys in your minor leagues right now just because I try to keep track of what's to come, too. So it's fun. I know the Mariners have to be excited, you know, and I think – DePoto and Scott Service, everybody involved, the front office. And I've even sat with guys in the media dining, some of the scouts and stuff. I think everybody's pointing to a nice long run for the Mariners to be contenders year after year.
What about on your end? Some curious things. And we were getting inklings of it when we were in Houston at the end of the year, but some big changes in the front office, running without a GM right now. It looks like they're putting Jeff Bagwell out as the face of all this, who's certainly a lot more conventional and traditional, it sounds like, than the numbers. What's going on? Where is this going? And what is behind it?
I think, you know, I'm not sure when you guys are going to run this, but I think sometime this week, and this is just my opinion, but I starting to hear some rumbling. I think they're going to announce a new GM this week. So it's probably by the time this airs, you know, maybe Thursday or Friday, the Astros are going to have an announcement and put somebody at the helm, and we'll kind of go from there. And I think more than anything, There's three assistant general managers who have kind of been running things the day-to-day right now and to line things up, what they need to do in player development and to get guys in situations and who to bring to spring training and things of that nature, because you have to have done that by now. So whoever's going to walk in is probably going to be an observer for a couple months. That's the way I would probably play it if I was the new GM, and try to assess what we have, not only as personnel on the field, but off the field too, and kind of go from there. It sounds like, I'm not sure, and things might change. It might be an opportunity for this next GM to hire his own manager, after a year or two. I don't know how much longer Dusty wants to do this, but right now he's on another one-year contract. But I don't know. I just don't think there's a whole lot to mess with right now. And I think there was a personality conflict with the last GM. I think he did a great job, and he led the team to a World Series championship. What else can you say? But I think when push comes to shove, there's styles and there's personalities involved in all walks of life, and those two didn't mesh that well.
You mentioned player development, which I think is the most important thing a team can be doing in the game right now, whether it's a young player or a veteran player or a minor leaguer. You've been around this game for a long time. You've been around the Astros for a long time, and they've been as good or better than everyone in baseball with player development the last number of years. The results kind of speak for themselves. What's interesting when you look at the last few years, now there's been turnover with GM. Some of the guys have gone to Baltimore. Strom has gone. There's been a lot of churn. How difficult is it to keep the continuity in what has worked so well with the comings and goings of staff?
What's kind of interesting about that is when they were trying to turn over from a 100-loss team and try to get things going, the blueprint was it's got to start with the farm system, and the farm system was lasting in the major leagues at the time when Jeff Luhnow took over, and when they took this plan together to try to turn things around. He said the only way we can have sustained success was to have a good minor league system, like the Mariners do now. They've got a lot of guys, and I'll be darned if the Astros weren't able to turn it around and get within the top five within a year and a half and then start to churn out some guys. And I had to look this up, and I think it was during the Mariners season in the division series last year that I realized, because Pena was playing so well in the playoffs, I looked it up anticipating that he might finish in the top five in rookie of the year, and he did. It's eight of the last 9 years now that the Astros have had a player finish in the top five of rookie of the year.
Wow.
And it goes back to Colin McHugh, Chris Davinsky, Alvarez, and Correa both won it, but Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, Jeremy Pena. I'm missing a couple, but my point is it wasn't Bregman or it wasn't Tucker, a couple of first rounders. It was guys they developed or they brought over and they tweaked it and they made better. So I say that because of this. The Astros aren't in the top half of farm systems now, but they're still developing players who don't seem to skip a beat when they get to the big league level, including Jeremy Pena, who was the World Series MVP last year. And whatever they're doing as far as development, and I can give you a short little story. This is a quick one, but I had a scout tell me that he was watching some young pitchers in A-ball a few years ago for the Astros, and they were throwing sliders and breaking pitches on 2-0 and 3-1 every single time. And more times than not, they walked them, and they were out of the game by the third or fourth inning because they reached their pitch count. And they were getting high fives when they went in the dugout. It was like they didn't care that they walked these guys. And I'll be darned if that wasn't Christian Javier, that wasn't Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy, and Framber Valdez, guys that do that routinely at the big league level now. So they're developing these guys to do what they need to do at the big league level, despite the results in the minor league side.
Sparky, that is some great insight. We appreciate the visit. The only thing that makes me sad about the new schedule is we get to see you a little bit less this upcoming season, but we'll still see you a lot. So I'm looking forward to it.
We will. Yeah, we'll take advantage of it then. So, sometimes acid makes the heart grow a little more fond, right?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Sparky. We appreciate it.
Great talking to you guys. Take care.
There it is, Steve Sparks from the Houston Astros broadcast team. Looking for a great spot to catch the big game? Come out to Hatback Bar and Grill, located across from T-Mobile Park. Great food and beer, plus free parking. It's a great place to be. Visit Hatback.com to make a reservation. We come back. We have so much more Hot Stove coming your way right after this.
The Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
Here's the stretch. The 3-2 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Stay fair. Holy smokes, he did it. Off the Hidden Air Cafe. Cal Raleigh with a walk-off home run. How sweet it is. The Mariners end the 20-year drought. And a walk-off home run by Cal Raleigh. They win the ball game 2-1. And the Mariners are good.
Cal Raleigh, we'll get to that in just a moment. Welcome back. Hot Stove here every Tuesday, 7 to 9. If you missed anything tonight, you can catch up tomorrow on Mariners Pod, wherever you find your podcasts. The Mariners promo schedule just dropped as well, jam-packed with can't-miss giveaways, a Julio bobble, a JP Funko Pop, the Clinch Cal bobble, which is very timely, a Geno bottle opener, 7 fireworks nights and more. Check out the full lineup and get your tickets at Mariners.com/promotions. Thanks for being here with us. And you get a fun surprise as we have a special surprise guest with us tonight. Speaking of the Clinch and Cal Raleigh, we have Cal Raleigh on the line with us tonight. I want to start with this. I don't know of any other way to ask this, but how has your life changed since you've become kind of a Seattle folk hero?
I wouldn't say nothing's really changed. I just say a lot more people recognize my face these days. And, I get a lot of congratulations and a lot of thank yous and all that good stuff.
But what does that mean to you when you hear that from people?
It means a lot, whether it's getting a message through social media or, seeing somebody on the street and, especially people from Seattle and, hearing how much it means to them that the drought's over and how much where they were and how they've been a fan through, the past 20, 21 years of the drought. And, to hear that, it made me happy that, not just me, but, the team could, pull it off and we could bring back playoff baseball to Seattle.
The home run that you hit, how long did it take for it to sink in how big that was for the region, for the fans?
I'm going to be honest, I don't even know if it's completely sat in yet. It's I still kind of get goosebumps thinking about it and just thinking about how special that moment was with everybody. And
it's so fun to look at the video and look at your face as you round first base. What was going through your mind in that moment?
Honestly, I don't even know what was going through my head. It was just kind of, it was just so crazy and so, I mean, just thinking about so many things going on and seeing the different, and the one thing I remember is just seeing the different faces of everybody when I was looking at towards the dugout and seeing everybody's reaction and then kind of rounding first and looking up towards the left field bleachers and just seeing everybody go crazy. And I just kind of put my hands on my head and was like, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened.
It's incredible. When you think back, obviously there was that moment. What are kind of the other moments that stick out during that entire run last year?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of moments. There's some good moments, there's some bad moments, but that's kind of what makes a 162 game season so special. I think about the crazy game we had, series we had in New York against the Mets, and we took 2 or 3 from them, and they were kind of rallying a late inning. I think of, when we were in Texas and we finished out right before the All-Star break going on that 14 game win streak. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's one of them. I think back to, multiple walk-offs of whether it was, you know, Gino or whether it was Julio or, you know, stuff like that. And obviously that was super crazy, super special. You know, Carlos is another one who's who came through in the clutch, and just how many of those close, tight games we had.
How much did you learn about yourself last year?
I learned a lot. You know, you go through some, like I said, some ups and downs, especially in those long seasons. And, you know, it's not always easy. So especially getting sent down and, you know, kind of having to reset and kind of figure out, you know, where do we go from here? And, you know, I think it was, all in all, it was for the better.
Given everything you did, all the success you had last year, how do you go into this season? How are you thinking about this year for you individually?
I don't think we try to come out and do too much. I think we have a good plan. We have a good system, and I feel like guys are going to be on the same page again and know what we need to do. And I think we go play. You know, I think the worst thing we do is try to press or try to do more. I think we have a good plan in place and just let our guys go play and let the rest take care of itself. Obviously we know we have some work to do to catch up to the Astros, obviously in division, but you know, that just comes with the territory. So we'll be ready to go by spring training, and I think everybody understands the goal this year.
I gotta be honest, there were times we knew you were dealing with the thumb in your hand, and there were times the last few weeks where, you know, you get a Castillo 99-mile-per-hour fastball, and we were wincing looking at what you were dealing with, what you were going through. How did you do that, given the severity of the injury you had and catching? We know what a brutal position that is. How difficult was that down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it wasn't easy. But, you know, I think kind of what pushed me through was just, you know, knowing my teammates and all the, you know, staff and the fans and everybody in the organization, you know, they're counting on us. And, you know, I just wanted to do my part and just try to help the team out any way I could. And especially down that stretch when we were so close to getting in and to keep advancing in the playoffs.
We talked so much about what you did offensively, but man, you had a great year behind the plate and you had a great pitching staff to catch. How much fun is that staff, just the pure stuff that you get to catch each and every day?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty disgusting the kind of stuff we have. you know, whether it's the rotation or the bullpen. So there, it was a special group, and you know, we're gonna have some guys coming back and some new faces as well. And you know, I'm really excited to get back into it and to catch these guys with a healthy thumb.
This may be an impossible question, but you get to see all of these firsthand. Who's got the nastiest pitch on the staff? One that you really wouldn't want to face very often?
I don't know. That's a tough question to answer because they're all, you know, special in their own ways. You know, we got a lot of different looks. I think that's something that we do a good job of. We have different guys that do different things really well. And I think that's what kind of makes our guys unique.
One of the great videos that came from the run is the elementary school celebrating. You went and visited the elementary school, didn't you? The classroom?
I did. Yeah.
You got to tell us about that, about seeing them in person.
It was awesome. You know, I had somebody, I can't remember who it was, show me the video. It might have been my mom, but just seeing them chant the name and them watching the playoff game and how happy they were. I knew I had to go see those guys and surprise them. And, you know, I'm glad I got to do that for them.
So I was in the team store the other day, and, you know, all the jerseys are hung up and you see everyone's jerseys there, including a Big Dumper jersey is now hanging up in the Mariners team shop. So when did you embrace the nickname?
I guess I've had the nickname now since I got called up, but I guess it didn't really kind of catch on until middle of the year this past season. So, you know, it's not the nickname I thought was going to be, but I embraced it and, I'll take anything I can get.
What are you most excited about for next year looking ahead?
Yeah, I'm just excited to build off what we did this past year. You know, as great as it was at the time and everything like that, I think we all know what challenge lies ahead. And, you know, now we kind of have a target on our backs and people kind of know about us now. So, you know, we're going to come out and come ready to play every single day. And, you know, like I said, try to get back to the playoffs because it's never easy. And once we get there, you know, we know what we have to do now.
Well, Cal, it was really great to catch up. I hope you enjoy the rest of your off season. Can't wait to see you in the spring. Thanks again for the time. We really appreciate it.
For sure. Thank you.
All right. There was Cal Raleigh. We'll come back. Shannon Dreyer and I will wrap things up here as Hot Stove continues right after this.
The Hot Stove Show on Seattle Sports.
Presented by Hatback Bar and Grill.
And now the 3-2 on the way to Cal. Swing and a drive into right field. This one is going. It is going. It is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Cal Raleigh, a two-run home run, has just shocked the fans here at Rogers Center. It's now the Mariners 3 and the Blue Jays nothing. We are in the top of the first inning. Number 28 on the year for Cal and number 1 in the postseason for Cal Raleigh, a 3-0 Mariner lead, and holy smokes, and a my, what an at-bat by Cal Raleigh.
Back one final time, it's the Hot Stove. You can catch us every Tuesday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Oh, Shannon, I really enjoyed catching up with Cal Raleigh. He's a celebrity now. You think about, and the further we get removed, I think, Shannon, from the clinch, the home run that clinched it, I mean, that's a top five, top three, top two, wherever you put it in Mariners history. And everyone maybe has it in a different spot, but it's one of the great moments in this franchise's history.
Without question. You can close your eyes and see the whole thing in front of you,
yeah,
just at any point. And the hand over the head, oh my gosh, what have I done, is just one of the greatest shots, I think, ever. But it's been so fun to watch his path, to see the responsibility he's taken on, the accountability that he has taken on, that yes, he will handle this pitching staff. Yes, he will manage two swings. And oh, by the way, he's got Hero in the back pocket as well. And then the stuff that he's done in the community, and he has quickly become a fan favorite. And I'll tell you this much, my mom, Patty Dreyer, got a Cal Raleigh jersey for Christmas.
Nice.
That was the one. And it's, I think we'll see a lot of those down in spring training. But what not just a good player, but a fun player to watch as well.
No doubt. And it's just another lesson. And it's a lesson that we all learn all the time about patience in this game as well. Cal Raleigh, a guy who was sent down early in the season because he was struggling. And he comes up and was a big reason why the Mariners did what they did, and not just the big moment, but everything that led up to the moment. He was such a big bat for the Mariners throughout the season.
Yeah, I spoke with him in season and probably about mid-season, and he just kind of lapped. I had him talking about Logan, and he said that they, you know, at night, since they were roommates, would talk quite a bit about, we learn something different every day at the big league level. It was something new every day, and that shouldn't be discounted.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think that when you see how young catchers are brought along, it can take a long time. And that was a pretty incredible acceleration for everything that was on his plate. And it'll be very interesting to see how he translates that into his second season.
I had so much fun in this show. I think we learned so much. Cooper Hummel was fantastic. I mean, how excited is he to be a Mariner? Dave Cameron was amazing. This was I really enjoyed this one.
Oh my gosh. There were plenty of questions. It was not hard to come up with questions, and there were eye-opening things. I'm looking forward to meeting Cooper Hummel in person now that we know, we mentioned at the top of the show, it's time. We've got to meet him, and it was great to meet him. Let's meet him down in Arizona. The Dave Cameron, really eye-opening in some of the things that he was talking about and how the Mariners and the rest of baseball, we know all about the numbers and the metrics, but they're really taking it to a new place, it would seem, with what they're doing. And I can't wait to get into more of that. Always good to catch up with the skipper and Sparky. What can I say? I mean, the knowledge there, and that's got me thinking, and I'm going to go back and listen to that again and just kind of find that blueprint. What kind of comes next? Really some interesting kind of tips and tidbits for where the Mariners are, it would seem.
And the Dave Cameron play-by-play is going to be my highlight of the spring. There's no question.
He's not getting out of that.
No, that's happening. That is happening. He seemed into it. I think it's legit.
I think he's ready. Well, he said he thought maybe he would be talk radio, that he did not think front office.
Give him time. He can think about it.
And, I think that was nice. So you don't just spring it on
him.
Yes.
Yeah. Because next time he's in the booth, here.
Putting him in the chair.
Here's the microphone. Go get him. Thanks, Shannon. This was fun.
I think we should do it again.
Next week.
All right. Tuesday?
Yes, 7 to 9, right here.
I think I'm free.
Okay, good. Hatback Bar and Grill is Soto's go-to spot for delicious bites and brews. Open for lunch and dinner every day, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. No better atmosphere to watch your favorite team. Check out the menu and tap list at hatback.com. We will be back next week, 7 to 9. Thanks for being with us. That's it for tonight. For Shannon Dreher, Gary Hill, so long. We'll talk to you next week.